No debate, no bias, just the news. Brass Tacks with Zucker Jacob.
So hello and welcome to the Brass Tacks podcast, weeknights 9:25 on CNN News 18. My name is Zucker Jacob. We have a special guest today, Anusuya Kumar. Anna is our producer of Brass Tacks. Welcome to the Brass Tacks podcast, Anna.
Thank you so much, Zucker. Like Zucker said, this is the one show where we are planning to put news back in prime time. 60 minutes, non-stop, the biggest stories of the day. And one of the stories that we're looking at today is the visit of Chinese President Xi Jinping. He will be coming to Chennai on the 11th of October. Zucker, why is this such a big deal?
So this is the second sort of informal summit between Xi Jinping and Narendra Modi. And I think they have sort of found this as the de facto mode of engagement now. This never used to happen before. The bilateral meetings were always formal. Either they were state visits or they were government-to-government, you know, official visits. This is the first time since Wuhan we're seeing these informal summits. I think the inspiration for it certainly came from the 2014 visit when Xi Jinping was here and Prime Minister took him to the Sabarmati and there were, you know, those pictures of them on the Jula and so on. And I think clearly he seemed to like it, Xi Jinping. So the first time then the Prime Minister went in 2015, they went to this place called Xi'an, which is the oldest city in China, and there was all of this, you know, optics.
It's also the birthplace of Xi Jinping.
Yeah, it happens to be the hometown of Xi Jinping. And again, it was a very informal thing. That was on day one. And the second day, they came to Beijing, and all the official stuff happened in Beijing. And then Wuhan happened, which was all of a sudden. There was no, you know, official nature to those talks. It was just by the lakeside. And I think what it also allows them to do, other than, you know, get to know each other and you know, break down all this officialdom and the diplomatic sort of wrangling that goes on, is that it sends out a signal to their respective bureaucracies that, look, at the highest level, at the leadership level, we're good friends. So if we agree on something, then get it done. While that's great, I mean, there's no problem with having an informal sort of arrangement at the top. I think what also becomes a bit of a problem is they're not bound by, you know, you have to have a joint declaration or an official statement at the end of it. So we don't really know what's come of it. Like, for example, over the last year since Wuhan, we've been hearing about the Wuhan spirit. Right? But what is the Wuhan spirit? We don't know what the Wuhan spirit is. What has it resulted in? So you could, at the end of 2 days in Mahabalipuram, hear of a Mahabalipuram spirit. But like I said, I think the devil is really in the detail.
But why do you think they waited till the 11th hour to make this announcement? Why did it take them? Because we are literally, 2 days away from the meeting?
Yeah, and we still haven't heard. I believe that the MEA is having a press conference on Wednesday to formally announce it. And there will be an announcement in the MOFA in Beijing as well. Again, the first time when Wuhan happened, if I'm right, I think Sushma Swaraj, who was the minister then, the foreign minister, she suddenly announced it out of the blue. It was barely a week before the prime minister traveled, and everybody was taken by surprise. So I think this sort of allows them to, you know, keep the surprise going. But in this case, I think in this particular Mahabalipuram visit, I think there's also been some back and forth and some contentious issues in the relationship. We've seen how China has reacted to the abrogation of Article 370. They have their own concerns. In fact, the very first statement they put out said, you know, we're against any unilateral change of the status quo. So yes, there are concerns. And not least, let's not forget this, Imran Khan is right now in Beijing. So I guess it's a bit of a balancing act for the Chinese.
All right. So you think that we will definitely be seeing a lot of this, what we saw during Wuhan, all these boat rides and tea parties and God knows what. Or we will be seeing all of that in Chennai as well.
You'll see a lot of sun and sand. I mean, Mahabalipuram is known for that. But I believe for the last 2 months, quietly, people have been working there. They've been clearing out a sort of a half a kilometer path where both the leaders will be walking. There are these, you know, there are these famous sculptures and artworks there from the Pallava dynasty. And I think the reason why Mahabalipuram was chosen was because apparently there used to be trade from that port to Southeast Asia, certainly, and perhaps as an extension to China as well during the Pallava dynasty. So I think, you know, Prime Minister also likes all of this historical context and references when it comes to his bilateral relationships. So I think he will try to impress upon Xi Jinping, you know, long before globalization and long before modern day diplomacy, there were always these cultural and trade linkages between India and China. And Mahabalipuram is an example of it.
All right. And you did mention Pakistan Prime Minister Imran Khan's visit in Beijing right now. I believe he's supposed to be meeting Xi Jinping sometime during the day. So how important is it in terms of the timing of it, India announcing this visit right now when Imran Khan is in China? And how important is it to have China's support on that matter over Kashmir, which is the issue that...
So the thing is, clearly we know why Imran Khan is in Beijing right now. And he clearly wants to tell Xi Jinping, he knows that Xi Jinping is going to Chennai, he's going to be meeting Modi. He wants Xi Jinping to impress upon Modi that what is happening in Kashmir is not on. Give the Kashmiris some space, give Pakistan some space. Let's get back to the bilateral sort of dialogue table. That's why Imran Khan is there. From the Chinese point of view, look, I think the Chinese are very clear about, they know that of all the countries in Asia, if you were to take a longer horizon, India is the only country that can possibly challenge them economically, strategically, maybe not now, but maybe 20 years from now. So it is in China's interest to keep India boxed in with Pakistan. It's in China's interest to ensure that the Kashmir problem is always going to be a bit of a headache for India. So I think there is a commonality of interests between China and Pakistan on that question. Between India and China, the question is, can we allow each other to rise in a way that we're not threatened by the other, or in a way that there is space for each other to rise? I think that the managing of that relationship is going to be the single biggest thing, in my opinion, that's going to define, you know, foreign relations in Asia, certainly for the next foreseeable, maybe 2-3 decades.
All right. We're hoping to cover all of this at 9:25 on Brass Tacks tonight. So stay tuned for that. But the other story that we'll be looking at is Rajnath Singh went to France yesterday to receive the first Rafale jet. And he performed what is being called as a Shastra Puja on the Rafale jet, which India is receiving. Now, the Congress is asking, why go all the way to France to do all of this tamasha? Is it justified?
Well, there are two ways of looking at it. The Shastra Puja is a very regular, very normal Hindu ritual that's carried out on Vijayadashmi. Everybody does it.
I think Rajnath does it every year.
Yeah, he does it every year as well. So there are people who do it in front of weapons. There's a version of it where, you know, kids are made to do this puja in front of books, because books are the weapons for kids. So it's a normal Hindu ritual that happens on Vijayadashmi. And apparently I'm given to understand that the IAF, every time it acquires a weapon, there is a puja that's done, but it's off camera. They don't publicize it. Yeah, you'd imagine, you know, you're spending, 59,000 crores to buy these 36 Rafales. That's about 1,800 crores a Rafale. Is the safety of it going to be dependent on those two lemons, below the wheels of the Rafale? It looks a bit, I wouldn't say silly, but it looks a little off. I mean, the French must be thinking, you know, this guy's come all the way from New Delhi. What is this thing that they're doing? I believe the French also have this good luck ritual that they do. They break a bottle of champagne on the Halawa ship or on a weapon.
Wow. Maybe somebody and coconut. That's a world of difference.
Somebody should have offered Rajnath Singh a bottle of champagne. This is what we French do. You know, you should break it on the nub of the aircraft. But look, yeah, it's become political. Again, Amit Shah has raised this in an election rally today. I think this is going to... Again, it plays into what the BJP's narrative is, that the Congress is anti-Hindu, it's anti-culture and anti-tradition, whereas we are the sort of true keepers of the Hindu religion and the Hindu faith. But, you know, how much of that is actually going to have resonance as far as the bread and butter issues of the elections are concerned? Well, this is certainly going to be a theme. I don't know if it'll be the meta theme, but certainly it'll be a theme in the elections. But, it's a fun debate, if not an interesting one.
But what was the image that was stuck in your head yesterday when you saw it? Was it the Rafale jet, or was it those two lemons that were stuck?
I think it was the lemons. I think the lemons win any day. I mean, it was fantastic. I mean, I get, you know, people when they buy a new car, they do this. Yeah. But this is not a car. This is the best fourth generation fighter aircraft in the world right now. Yeah. I don't think its safety is dependent on those two lemons. So yeah, that's my two cents on it.
We should certainly hope not. But this is Brass Tacks, and we are covering everything, not just India-related stories. We will be looking at international, entertainment, sports, everything. So the other big international story that is dominating headlines the world over is Trump and impeachment. Two words which are like almost synonymous right now.
Yeah, it's a bit, it's like a cocktail. It's like, I don't know, gin and tonic. Yeah. Because, you know, for me, what's fascinating, Anna, about this story is, you know, when it came out 2 months ago, as expected, there was denial, right? That was the first sort of reflexive reaction. Oh, no such call happened. Then the whistleblower came, and then they were like, yeah, the call happened, but nothing, you know, there was no quid pro quo in the call. And then they released the transcript, and turns out in the transcript, well, he didn't use the words quid pro quo, but it seemed pretty much like a quid pro quo. So every time there's been a new development in this case, Trump has literally just buried himself in this hole. And I think that's what he's done with this latest move by writing to the House Democrat leadership saying that the White House is not going to be cooperating. That itself is grounds enough for them to launch impeachment. Yeah. So I don't think Trump is certainly he's not playing this legally smart, no doubt about it. But his calculation is politically, maybe this might help rally his base. It might paint him as a victim. It might paint him as the guy who they've gotten out or gotten after because he's an outsider, so on and so forth. Again, I'm really not sure. I think Trump is not ahead of this story. He's not coming out looking good at the end of the story.
In fact, there is a Washington Post survey, which we will show on Brass Tacks tonight as well, which mentions a majority of Americans saying that this whole impeachment story that has come up right now will backfire for Trump so close to the elections.
Oh, absolutely. Look, again, I know America is very polarized politically. I mean, Republicans are hardcore Republicans and Democrats are hardcore. But this is something that cuts through the politics. This is, I mean, most average Americans, Republican or Democrat leaning, do not like their president and the institution of the presidency to be dragged through the mud like this. They don't like a president who has to survive the tag of being impeached. I mean, Bill Clinton, he was hugely popular at one point of time, but the impeachment completely, you know, history will not remember Clinton the same way just because of that one episode. So I think Americans cutting across, you know, the political divide, whether you're Republican or Democrat, I don't think would be predisposed to liking Trump at the end of this episode. I think if there are people who are in the middle, they would, at least a majority of them would come out and say, I don't think I like this for the US president. Therefore, I don't think this man should be, if he were to get impeached, which increasingly looks not just a possibility. I think it's definitely going to happen.
Yeah, but let's be clear. Impeachment doesn't mean we're getting rid of Trump.
Of course.
there is an entire process to that. And it comes down to the Senate where Republicans have the numbers. Trump has the numbers.
Or he could just lose the election next year.
Or he could just lose the elections. Well, let's see. Yeah. The Democrat debate will be coming up on CNN on Thursday, if I'm not mistaken.
It's in about a few days' time. But really, I think what Trump is trying to do is to paint himself as the victim. I don't know if this is good enough for him to A, rally his base, or whether that's good, even if he were to rally the base, if that's good enough to win a general election next year.
All right. Let's see. I'm sure Trump is keeping his fingers crossed.
All right.
And we are keeping our fingers crossed for the show tonight.
That's at 9:25. All of these stories and more. Brass Tacks, weeknights at 9:25 p.m. on CNN News 18.
No debate, no bias, just the news. Brass Tacks with Zucker Jacob.